The InStyleOwen podcast is brought to you by Cybionics, an emerging CGM brand that focuses on simplifying how individuals aged 18 and above monitor and control their blood sugar levels. Upon becoming available on the market, the Cybionics GS1 CGM has helped users worldwide navigate the complexities of diabetes management with more confidence and peace of mind. Thanks to Cybionics, now more people are able to view and share their real-time glucose data, receive customizable glucose alarms, and generate full AGP reports, all directly from an intuitive Cybionics app, empowering them with the necessary information to make better decisions about their health. Cybionics combines data accuracy and comfort of wear, which is important to us all, with a feature-rich app. The 14-day scanning-free and calibration-free Cybionics GS1 CGM aims to deliver reliable, seamless diabetes management experiences. For more, check out cybionicscgm.com. This is the InStyleOwen podcast, where I, Owen Costello, try to redefine diabetes. In this week's episode,
there are times and situations where you can eat low carb as using, for example, a tool for a specific goal or a purpose. But in general, I think it wouldn't be advisable to restrict any form of macronutrient or micronutrient for the body.
But before we get into that, everything you hear on the InStyleOwen podcast is from my own personal experience. And if you have any worries or issues regarding your diabetes, please contact a medical professional. Now, let's get stuck into this episode. How's it going, everybody? Hope all is well, and welcome back to the InStyleOwen podcast with myself, Owen, obviously. I introduce myself every week as if you don't know who it is. Anyway, welcome back. Delighted you're here for another episode. And this is a guest episode that I personally really, really enjoyed. And I know you're going to really, really enjoy listening to it. And the guest that I have is Ronnie van der Linden. He's from the Netherlands. And we wanted to get Ronnie on the podcast because he actually emailed into us relatively recently a bit about his story. And I want to read out the email that Ronnie sent us just so that it gives the episode itself a bit more context and you know the type of person that Ronnie is, because he tells a lot about himself just in this email, which is amazing to hear and amazing to see, because he is, in my opinion, a fantastic role model and inspiration for anybody living with diabetes, and particularly anybody who may be struggling currently with it, or anybody who is going through a period of maybe they're not giving it as much attention as they need, and maybe they're neglecting it more than they should. And I think Ronnie is a perfect example of how we can turn things around very quickly and see the benefits of that with our health, short-term and long-term. So Ronnie's email that he sent to myself and Graham says, "Hey Owen, Graham, hope you're both good. In your last podcast, 12 Lessons of 12 Years Living with Type 1 Diabetes, you've asked the listener to chime in and to share what they have learned from living with the condition. So here I am. I've been type 1 diabetic for 27 years now, and it has been an interesting journey to say the least. I got diagnosed at 6 years old. In my teens, there was no diabetes tech, no social media, and nobody in my area living with type 1 diabetes. This made it more difficult for me to cope with the condition, so I stuck my head in the ground when it comes to the glucose management and acted like I had nothing to worry about. When I turned 23, there was this voice in the back of my head prompting me to maybe do a checkup at the hospital for the first time in a long time. Maybe because I got older and felt more responsible, I don't know. Either way, I went and got my bloods and urine tested. They found microalbuminuria. You have to give me patience with that one. Even Ronnie struggles to say it in the podcast, right? Which is an indication of kidney damage. This was unacceptable for me as a 23-year-old. So from that point on, I did everything in my power to control my glucose levels. I went from not knowing how to count carbs after 17 years with type 1 diabetes. I know, dot, 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 to creating a blog, coaching others to better manage their glucose levels, working at JDRF, Dexcom, speaking at events, and most recently, Build Muscle and Got Lean for a fitness photo shoot to inspire others. And if you ask me, this is only the start. So what I feel like Graham now, struggling to read out an email. So what have I learned? Your obstacle can be your biggest why. Diabetes gave me purpose. It opened doors. It made me grateful and more healthy than I would ever be without it. And want to know the funny thing? After the initial few tests showing the microalbuminuria and me getting better at managing my glucose levels, it never appeared again. Now, reversing kidney disease isn't really a thing as far as I'm aware of, but thanks to my connections in the field I'm working in, I got in touch with a highly renowned endocrinologist where I could also do a scan of my kidneys and a more reliable but more expensive blood test called cystinine ACK. All is perfectly fine, and he expects I had a kidney infection back in the day, which you can get better from. So that's the story I wanted to share with you guys. Also taking this opportunity to tell you that the podcast is absolutely fire. I listen every week. Owen, you're an inspiration when it comes to mindset, habit forming, etc. If you're open to connect on that stuff, feel free to send a message on Instagram at Ronnie V D Linden. That's RonnieVDLinden. I'll put it in the description notes. I bet Fred, who is also somebody we know, I'm also from the rainy Netherlands, knows we think alike when it comes to this stuff. Keep up the great content. Cheers, Ronnie. So that's the email that Ronnie sent. He's a legend just from reading the email, but you're really going to enjoy this episode. So I'm now going to stop talking. Enjoy. Okay, Ronnie, we've just officially pressed record, and I said we should probably just press record because we would likely get into a conversation and forget to press record after having a full conversation. But we're here. Good to see you. You were just about to tell me about essentially the exciting weekend you have planned, which is slightly different for you, Ronnie. There's a voice crack, by the way. Voice crack to start the podcast.
Right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning. You make me nervous, Ronnie. You make me nervous. But tell me about your plans for the weekend. Why is it an exciting weekend for you?
Yeah, man. First off, thanks for being here. Excited to be on this podcast, obviously, because I listen every week to it. But yeah, I'm going to run a 5K this week. You already know I'm in a gym quite often, but I just started to pick up running again. And the end goal is a marathon somewhere in 2025. But I thought a 5K is a nice start, nice beginning to build up some conditioning and to see where it goes from there.
So you're obviously, Ronnie, really into like weight training and resistance training and going to the gym. You're in fantastic shape. How will your management or preparation, do you feel, kind of differ with the 5K on the weekend compared to just going to the gym for a weight workout? I presume, given the type of person you are, you've already thought about this a lot. So what's the preparation for your 5K as opposed to just a gym workout?
Well, it's a good question because you're not the first one who asked me that, because some people on Instagram also asked me like how do you prepare compared to weightlift. And the funny thing is that I start with the thing that's similar, and that's not going into the activity with a lot of insulin on board to make my glucose levels more predictable, obviously. So basically that's what I'm going to do as well. The thing is, for my trainings, which I've done up to now for the 5K, I go fasted in the morning before breakfast. So that's pretty easy run, or easier to manage my glucose levels. But this run will be on 11 a.m. and I cannot wait until 11 a.m. to put some food into my system. But obviously I would like to still be having relatively low levels of insulin on board when starting that run. So I think I will opt for a lower carbohydrate breakfast in that case, just to decrease the bolus size basically, and have it out of my system quicker, relatively quicker, and still I would like keep 3 4 hours apart from start at breakfast to actually starting that race. So that's my approach, basically. And I can
Right.
go more into depth because it has been changing a lot with using automated insulin delivery system, obviously, compared to when I was on pens. And I also run a 10K back in the days when I was on pens. Totally different way of approaching it.
Well, that's something that we had even spoken about recently when we were on a call. The difference between being on a pen or insulin pens compared to a closed loop system. So, what will your practical advice, or I suppose, what would your actual approach be if you're looking at reducing your insulin for your pre, let's call it your breakfast or your pre-run meal? Is that a percentage decrease you do? Do you knock off a unit? Do you knock off 2 units? Like, how do you work that out? Or do you just kind of knock it off by a certain amount and hope that it works, kind of thing?
If I would run within 2 hours after breakfast, then I would knock off a certain percentage, most of the, and it depends on the length of the run, obviously, as well, and the intensity. But let's say for a 5K, I would do 60 or 70% of the bolus. But in this case, I would eat breakfast, low carb, 3 or 4 hours ahead of the running, ahead of starting the race. So I wouldn't need to decrease it a lot, basically nothing, to be honest, because no, that's it. I cannot anything. I don't need to add anything onto that. That's it. So I wouldn't need to decrease it because it's already a low carb meal and it's like 3 or 4 hours in advance of the race.
So, any insulin that you take is pretty much out of your system anyway at that stage. So you're
Yeah, and
pretty confident going in.
exactly. And because it's a low carb breakfast, the bolus is smaller. Smaller boluses get out of the system quicker compared to bigger boluses, so.
So, Ronnie, one of the main things that I wanted to cover with you, or what I wanted to hear more about from you today, was your own history with diabetes. You've now been diabetic for, I think, 27 plus years, which is
This
15.
month
Yeah, how
is
does it?
28 years actually in
Wow.
March, but I don't know which day because I never
Okay.
got the official date of
Nice.
diagnosis. I cannot find it
You
anywhere.
don't know when to get your cake, the exact day.
No.
So you're 28 years. That's 13 years more than me. Oh, wait, no, what am I? I'm 12 years. 17 years. 17 more years than me. Wait, no, 16. I can't even do my maths. 16.
Whatever you say, I trust you.
Yeah. My brain is just not functioning properly today.
Really
Six.
nervous. You're
Yeah,
right,
all right, what can I say?
man.
So 16 years more than me as a diabetic, which is
Yeah.
fascinating. But you actually, Ronnie, sent myself and Graham an email kind of outlining a bit of a turning point for you and your health about 17 years into your diabetes journey, let's call it. Tell us about that. Give us a bit of insight around what that email was about and essentially just your story around it.
Yeah, and I will try to keep it relatively brief because it was a
Don't
very long
tell it
email.
as you need
Oh,
to.
no worries, man. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird story, to be honest. I mean, when I was diagnosed, the world looked different, right? When it comes to diabetes in treatment, but also, I mean, you didn't even have social media, so you don't have people to talk to in. Maybe if you know somebody face to face, but definitely nothing of no, or nobody to look up to. So that was already a little bit more difficult because you cannot express feelings when you're growing up, or nobody understands. And I bet a lot of your listeners on this podcast know that situation where they feel like nobody understands you. You've got a disease that nobody understands, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, I had the same feeling when I was growing up. I mean, when I was really young, I got diagnosed when I was 6, and when I was really young, it's not something you think about like that. But when you get like in your early teenage years, right, that's when it gets more difficult. When you see your friends doing whatever they want to do, and you have to think about diabetes all the time, it's easier to say, I don't want to think about this. So I didn't. So back then I was in love with skateboarding, and I would never ever regularly check my glucose levels. I didn't know how to count carbs, and I'm talking about when I was like from the age of 12 until the age of 16, 17, right? So I only basically went about my management as when I felt high or I felt low. So that was always way too high and way too low, because obviously you want to prevent a hypo and a hyper, but I didn't. So when I was high, I took a bolus, random amount, got back to skateboarding, didn't know anything about insulin, acting up or acting twice or up to five times as fast when I was in moving on my skateboard, etc. Got in a hypo, treated it with like the sweetest things on Mother Earth, and the roller coaster went on and on and on. Okay, so that was then, and then at one point I was around 23, I believe. I also gained some weight, because if I mean I don't know if you know the phenomenon of feeding your insulin, I think is how they call it in English terms, is that when you basically inject more insulin than you need and you fill it up with calories, you basically gain weight. Makes sense. You're in a caloric surplus because you've forced a hypo yourself, basically. So I was a little bit overweight when I was 23. And I also felt more sluggish, but I don't know where it came from, but I had a feeling that I had to take a little bit of more responsibility for my health. Maybe just because I got a little bit older, maybe because I saw people around me being more aware of their health. I don't know, but I heard some basically voices in my head say, or telling me, maybe you should go to the, I think it's called GP in Ireland, again, because at that point I wasn't even going to the hospital anymore, because they gave up on me. This is no joke. And I can't blame them, man. I was never going to any appointments whatsoever. So, yeah, I went to the GP, and he was, I will never forget his name. His name was Walter, and he was like, okay, so we have got a lot of things to do, but we're going to take it very slowly. And I really like him for that. We're going to ease you into it, but we have to know where you're standing at this point, right? Where you, before you, you're knowing where you should be, you should know where you're starting out at. So draw some blood, gave a urine sample, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, very quickly, he came back with the relatively bad news that there was microalbuminuria in my urine, which in diabetic terms are signs of early stage kidney failure. And that was a big shock, because I was like, okay, I'm 23. I'm here to take more responsibility. And at the first visit, I get like, or it wasn't literally the first visit, but at the first attempt, I get like a slap in the face, because I've been neglecting my diabetes all these years. I mean, I knew that, and now I have to overcome this as well. That's going to be tough, especially because somebody in my family at that point also experienced kidney failure in a way more advanced stage. She was on dialysis, actually. So I could see what my life could be if I didn't take control at this point right now. So a lot of emotions. Again, I was really shocked at that point. A lot of emotions running through me. And again, at that point, there wasn't a lot of information available on the internet on how to better manage type 1 diabetes. So I was really dependable on his information, which was ok at that point, but not nearly good enough for if you actually want to thrive with diabetes. But hey, it got me started, and that was the turning point for me, because I realized I'm 23 now. I don't want to end up on dialysis later on, and I got a full life in front of me, so I have to take control now. And from there on, it got better each and every day. And I can also already tell you about it. You saw it in the email. I mean, this maybe sounds a little bit heavy and dark for listeners, but there is a good ending to this story. but we can get into that after maybe a little bit later on, because I can imagine you might have some questions as well.
It's like, I can only imagine the shock that you went through. And as you say, like, going in there with the best intentions to make a change with your life after essentially neglecting it or avoiding it for 17 years up to that point, I suppose getting that shock was probably at the moment, like in the moment, the last thing you needed. But in hindsight, a thing that you did need. And as you say, it has been a turning point for you. Let's say, Ronnie, that didn't happen. You didn't go, and you kept avoiding it.
100%. I would still be overweight. I would have more diabetic complications. I would have not nearly the control I have on my glucose levels I have nowadays, let alone find my enjoyment in the gym like I do. Not run the 5K, that wouldn't be possible, let alone the marathon I want to go do next year. All that kind of stuff. I mean, you're the king of this. It's all in the mindset, right? Where it starts. And from there on, your life can only get better, to be honest.
So after you got this news that things weren't right, essentially, what was the next step then? Did you get more medication? How does it look after you get this news?
Well, you start, at least back then, I started out with the basics, like understanding carbohydrate counting. And I was switching from 2 times insulin per day, because that was still a thing back then, to multiple daily injections like most people know it nowadays. So that gave me a little bit more flexibility as well, which meant I could tweak my diet as well back then. And back then I was convinced, again, because a relatively scarce amount of information on the internet or elsewhere, I was convinced that low carb is the way to go. And I was also convinced that that would bring my weight down, which it did initially, but as you know, it's all about caloric balance. And so that, well, it's a learning process from there on, right? And if you, the starting point was that I nailed down some basics on diabetes management and went on to go on this journey of figuring out things myself. And by doing that, at least I got improvements in energy, and also in back then I was playing soccer a lot as well, but yeah, in energy and in enjoyment in my sports, and I got more results. And from there on, you find like this drive and why to continue improving and to continue searching for relevant information and to implement that in your diabetes management. So yeah, that a little bit later on, I remember Instagram getting bigger. And that was the first time, basically, when I got in touch with some people with type 1 diabetes across the border, in the USA, in the UK. And I mean, I got the opportunity to ask some people who were really advanced in weightlifting, in sports, etc., on how they manage diabetes. And that was the biggest help of all, because information that I got from them that wasn't available in the Netherlands. I mean, obviously nowadays, when you go to a hospital and you talk about fat and protein having impact on your glucose levels, etc., that's normal. Back then, the only thing you, when it comes to diet and sports and exercise with type 1 diabetes, it was count your carbs. And when you go for a run, decrease the amount of insulin and just figure out how much and when by doing. And yeah, that was all you got. So getting in touch with other people with type 1 diabetes, that really changed things up. And from there on, it went fast, the improvements in glucose levels and in quality of life, basically.
When I think of you now, Ronnie, like you're a completely different person. Like I obviously don't know you very long, but I know the type of person that you are, and I know what you do, and I know the standard that you hold for your diabetes management. Like you, to come from the place that you were at for, it wasn't just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You were like that for 17 plus years. So to see that transformation to how you are now is just unbelievable. Like unbelievable, you know. Tell me then, Ronnie, did like how long did it take you, do you feel, for you to like feel confident in your management, for you to feel good with energy, mood, performance, how you just feel in general with your diabetes after getting that news? Was it like 6 months, a year, 2 years until you felt, wow, like this is actually something that doesn't have to be that much of a negative in my life? It can potentially make me healthier.
I think it depends on which thing you zoom in on. I mean, for example, when it comes to energy, if you increase your time in range with 10, 15, 20%, you feel more energetic relatively quickly, right? But it's also on how do you get that time in range? Is it by spending twice or triple the amount of time on your diabetes management, because that has a burden on your mental energy, obviously. And are you, for example, restricting anything in your diet, because that can really mess up your relationship with food? So for me, it took relatively long because I had to overcome all those little hurdles. So initially, I started eating low carb, which had a negative impact on my mental energy, my relationship with food, because I cannot live without carbs. I eat a lot of carbs. I've never been officially diagnosed with it, but I'm pretty sure I had an eating disorder at one point due to restrictive eating, and feeling guilty when my glucose levels were high, because I was also obviously afraid of the seen complication getting worse. So that was a challenge in and of itself. So I had to do a lot of self-reflection as well. A lot of, I wouldn't say meditation or something, but just speaking to yourself and putting things in perspective to understand, okay, so my mind is thinking this, but what's actually going on? And seeing that, okay, so if I restrict food or if I put it away, this emotion comes up, and is that the emotion I want to have or deal with, or is there another way? From there on, you also start tweaking your habits and the way you think about things, etc. And obviously also when speaking with other people with type 1 diabetes and sharing experiences, that helps a lot to put things into perspective. So I wouldn't say I was there within 1 year after learning some basics on injecting insulin and timing of insulin and carbohydrate counting. No. I also had to overcome some mental challenges, some food issues, and I would say maybe 4 years even before I really got confident on, okay, I'm at a good level now, happy with my time and range, but also the amount of energy I'm putting into diabetes management, when I'm getting out of diabetes management, and my quality of life around that. So it wasn't in one day, it took a while, and still up to this point, I'm confident as ever, and I'm really good with all those aspects. So I'm happy I've overcome those, because it gives you perspective and just even more confidence on from where you've been to where you are at now.
How do you Makes feel sense? you kind of got past that idea of, I want to eat carbohydrate, but I'm also afraid of my blood sugar spiking rapidly? But then the flip side of it is like, well, because I'm kind of afraid of my blood sugar spiking rapidly, should I be more restrictive? And then obviously, as you said, feeling as if that was having a negative impact on essentially your relationship with food, or how you like to eat fundamentally, and it was kind of challenging that. How did you get past that period?
That was part one of this episode. If you are listening to this on the day of the release, part two will be out tomorrow. But if you're listening on any other day, part two is the next episode on our list.